September 21, 2020, it's the Walk for Pedro show.
Thank you.
for Pedro show. Happy Monday. Brother Matt went to Catalina. I think he's at the Isthmus. Anyway, I'm not totally man alone because those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, you might have heard some noise. Is that over? Is that Philadelphia, Ben?
Yep.
Okay. People, Bennett, all the way from Philadelphia via Skype, welcome aboard, Ben.
Glad to be here, Mike.
Yes. You know, we got to thank Brother Evan for making the connect, and he flowed me your music, and it's fucking righteous. And well, I should tell the people we started with John Coltrane doing Village Blues Take 3, and then Ben Bennett with This Is How to Dance, which is, I kind of used this to catch up on a little my hoofing, so thank you.
All right, I'd love to see how you worked to that one.
But, you know, it's kind of the way what attracted me to the movement and pulled me away from arena rock was this very personal approach to embracing music as a form of expression. And I think you're one of those kind of pioneer people. And I'm very grateful for that.
Oh, really glad you're digging it.
Okay, so let's give the listeners a little background. What's the earliest musical recollection that you have, Ben?
Oh, so I was thinking about this, and I got two of them for you, and that I think happened around the same time. So I think the first concert that I must have ever seen was in Columbus, where I grew up, Columbus, Ohio. They police force had a rock band of cops called Hot Pursuit, and they would go around and like play for the elementary schools, and they played at my elementary school, you know, like one of these attendance required assemblies. And, yeah, they had a song about DARE, like DARE to keep kids off drugs. And, they had guitars shaped like rifles. And, so I was just remembering this for the first time recently, and realizing that that was probably my first concert that I'd seen. And I looked them up, and they've got a YouTube video of that song. And it's ridiculous, and I would recommend that. The band's called Hot Pursuit. But at that time, what I was really into was Little Richard, because my dad had one of his cassettes, and I would just play that over and over again and just rock out to that. And at some point, I think in first grade, in music class in school, the teacher, Miss Jefferson, asked me some kind of music related question. I can't remember exactly what the question was, but something with a straightforward answer. And I raised my hand, and she called on me. And for whatever reason, my answer was to just stand up and start singing "You Keep a Knockin', But You Can't Come In," and dance into it. And so then the whole class, you know, erupted in laughter, and I became kind of known as that kid.
That Little Richard fan kid. Now, yeah. In Columbus, Ohio, which is kind of like the hub, right? It's in the middle of the state.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And all the other big towns are up against rivers or lakes.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed about Ohio. Another thing I notice is the flag. It's a pennant. It ain't a flag.
That's right.
Right, the only one in the Union. Anyway, yeah. In this pad, where your pop had the Little Richard cassette, was there instruments?
Yeah, we had a piano that my mom played, and that I played some piano too when I was young. And my dad played some saxophone a little bit. He's actually more of a poet, but he did play some saxophone when I was younger.
Was there a sax in the pad?
Yeah.
Tenor, alto?
Tenor, okay. I believe.
Like John Coltrane. Bigger, yeah. Brother Steve. Yeah, summer, both of them had Summer Mark VI. I'm curious. The piano was there. Were you asked to take lessons?
Yeah.
How was that experience, Ben?
I remember that being all right. I think my parents did have to kind of force me to practice every day, and I probably, you know, put up put up some protests and made their lives hell a little bit about it, but I think it was all right. And so I took some piano lessons, and then at some point in school I switched over to playing clarinet in the band. And so I was playing clarinet, and then at some point in, well, it was in middle school, I switched over to drums because I wanted to, I don't know, play along with the Smashing Pumpkins songs and stuff like that.
Yeah, probably with rock and roll, not a lot of clarinet, although there was a Cleveland band that had a guy rocking the clarinet, Death of Samantha, John Petkovich.
Okay, I don't think I'm familiar with that.
Well, it might have been a little before your time, but not too far away. They, you know, it was really big in the 40s and shit. Artie Shaw and a lot of band leaders played. Yeah, because it could cut through.
Yeah.
The nickname was the Licorice Stick.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My friend, my buddy Zoots Houston is always calling his clarinet the Licorice Stick.
Yeah, that was a kind of slang for it. And interesting how things go in and out, but it was kind of the lead guitar. It would do solos. It could stick out. It, you didn't usually use it to carry the band. It's trippy how, how music gets informed by the, I don't know, trend. A sense of style of the moment, and some instruments are in and some are out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did like Benny Goodman for a while.
Right, and a band leader, right? In fact, a guy who did a lot for the guys in his band because there was huge discrimination and shit. Oh, you know about that. That's great. You know about that stuff. But you learned how to do that clarinet in the school band and do the piano with the lessons. You learned to read.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Because a lot of people, negative experiences on this show, it seems it had a lot to do with the teacher. You had a good teacher?
Let's see. Yeah, actually, interestingly enough, my my very first piano teacher, her name was Ann Stimson, and we just took, I just took lessons over at the, like, the music shop, in the mall, and, so she was teaching me, like, you know, very beginning piano when I was, like, I don't know, 5, 6 or something like that, and, I ended up taking a college class from her way later, where she was teaching, like, 20th century to modern music, and which was a class that I was really interested in. She was giving us, like, Morton Feldman and Cage and...
Well, I was going to ask Cecil Taylor.
it wasn't that, because it was, like, more 20th century modern or modern classical tradition stuff.
But still pretty open.
Yeah, and I was, like, the only person in the class that actually was interested in this stuff. And you had all these other kids, like, hearing Schoenberg or whatever and being like, this is not music. And so, I mean, I feel like her job was kind of sucked in that, in having to teach all these close-minded kids. But I gave her, you know, a big note of appreciation and said, you know, you taught me my first piano lessons, and here you are turning me on to... some other trippy shit.
I think there's another lesson too, like, people are not stepping stones. They might come back into your life. So
be
careful. Don't be an idiot. Don't burn bridges. Yeah. Don't be
You know, there might be a whole nother layer of depth to
absolutely.
You know, that you don't know about.
That's really interesting that you picked up on that, Ben. Great. What about the first record you bought with your own fucking money?
I think it was Smashing Pumpkins, Pisces, Iscario, cassette.
So second time you mentioned that. So did you do the thing like after school with some friends, basement, bedroom, garage band, maybe doing Smashing Pumpkin copies?
the first one of those bands, I remember we were playing TV Killed the Radio Star. We were like covering that song.
Tom.
And
no, who was that? Buggles. And, right? I think it was, yeah.
Buggles. I think so.
It was one of the guys, I think he was in Swell Maps.
Oh, okay.
So it was a trippy-ass band, you know, early punk in England, right? Jane from Occupied Europe, a great album. It was two brothers. We've lost both of them, Nicky Sutton and Epic Soundtracks. I met Epic a few times. Great, great cat, sweet guy. I want to play Untitled here. Good title. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. When Uncle Jim uses Jew as a verb, as grandfather did, do you cringe? I don't like it, sober or high. Weirdly comforted by the fog we grew up in.
Show, yeah, that was Untitled, Ben Bennett. So new that I've been offered the chance to title it. Maybe like Ben Enlightens Watt, or something like that. Then we had Fire Sale Dub from Model Home, collaborating with His Name Is Alive. Aunt Sally with Anna Cole, Osaka Band. Tokyo Band, brand new, RO4 with Sink It. And Draco with Indian Summer, Spring Rain, that's new. No, it's Spring Rain, Indian Summer, what? Got a little dyslexic on you. Brain Switch. Cithurthium Astronauts. I think that's out of Croatia. And that's brand new. Dan McGuire, he was on the last episode. Toledo. I thought he was still in Maumee, but he had moved up the river a little bit. Family Gatherings. It's coming up, like Thanksgiving, the greatest holiday. funny things. A lot of baggage connected with that. I sounded like this when I saw a dog dressed up in all your clothes by Ben Bennett. That's a great title, man. You know, I have to start, when I compose, I have to start with titles or I'll have no focus.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, that band you were doing with, well, first let me ask you about your trap kit. The first drum set you got, what was it?
Oh, it was, It was like one of the Rogers from the 80s when they had just kind of like licensed their brand name out to some more generic company.
Yeah.
So there weren't any of those like vintage maple shells or anything, but it's probably like a more mahogany kit. But yeah, I played those for a really long time. I think my dad just bought them used out of the newspaper classified ad or something like that. And I actually still play one of the toms from there, even though
it lives on.
One I'm playing now is all cut up Frankenstein, sawed up, mixed up pile of stuff.
That's okay.
But yeah, I still got that drum shell that I play.
You're talking about like cannibalized, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. A lot of drummer, George Hurley did that shit. Everybody knows. Yeah, because a trap kit's a lot of things, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of you know, the history of it, New Orleans and stuff, Larry Mullins was talking about it. It was kind of a kludge in those days. The toms come from like kind of Chinese drums and cymbals and all.
Well, anyway, that's where the word trap came from, was from contraption.
That's so, right. Like,
that's
right. It was kind of like out of necessity, right? It wasn't theorized. Mm-hmm. The known was in the doing. I'm curious. He gets you this kit, but does he put a stipulation like, if I get you this kit, you got to take less? Where did you learn how to play drum?
I was taking lessons. From another guy named Russell Myers. So I was taking those lessons, and what I would do with him was just bring in music that I liked and that I wanted to learn the drum parts to, and we would just figure out the drum parts, and then I would play along with that stuff.
Now, with your band, you did some bands with your buddies, right? You were saying. Where did you prac? At home? In the garage? Bedroom?
The band practice was in my friend's basement.
So you brought your drum set over there, so his parents dealt with it.
No, I think he had a kit there.
Oh, bitchin'.
Yeah.
So you never had to set up and tear down? Yeah, that's... I ended up doing that in my prac bag because I got tired of waiting for people.
Yeah.
I was an asshole, though. I should have used that opportunity to learn. I think if you can play drums, you can play anything, because so much, especially with the rock and roll, it's about rhythm.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So did you guys make a band? High school band, junior
high? We didn't. That band didn't do very much aside from, like, you know, playing in the high school talent show or something like that. That particular group, and then later on in my junior year in high school, I went to this music program for half the day, every day of the school year. I'd go to this other school, and it was this. It was just a music program, and they would put us in these combos, and we would learn jazz songs and funk songs and whatnot. And they would actually book us gigs around town, and they were kind of training us to be like working musicians. And so we'd like play a gig at like some corporate party or something like that, or, I remember playing one at some strange McDonald's event where they're having some competitive, some competition between like McDonald's teams for, you know, flipping burgers and whatnot. And for whatever reason, they hired a band for this, and so we played this event. But in that program, I learned a lot. There were some really good teachers. There were two teachers there, and they're both really passionate. And the one knew that I was getting into like free jazz and stuff like that, and he knew that I was into Sun Ra, and he let our combo play Sun Ra's Space Is the Place, you know, kind of this epic jam, freak out type of thing. And we went to some event that was like for high school big bands. And so there was some kind of like suburban high school big band playing typical big band stuff. And then we just played this, you know, freak out space jazz for like half an hour. And it was great.
So was this still Columbus?
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, for a while, Sun Ra lived in Philadelphia.
That's right.
The Saturn House was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a great book by John Swed, Space is the Place. And a couple of years ago, I read it, and I recommend it to everybody. I think you'd be digging on it. So that teacher was pretty balls out to go against the grain and all the square stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much respect. What was his name?
Jim Maneri.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
And see, and the other teacher there, Jeff McCargish, I should give him a shout-out.
Yeah, because that stuff, especially good teachers, because bad teachers have consequence too, but
it usually doesn't
happen.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I've heard of bad music teachers chasing people away from music.
Uh-huh.
Especially with that piano shit with kids being younger and getting their hands beat and shit like this. So you get out of high school, do you want to take music further?
Yeah, so after graduating high school, I formed another band with two of the guys that I met in that program, and it was kind of like a free rock power trio or something, bass, drums, and guitar. And we had started out originally playing covers and trying to write songs, but then we would just end up jamming and messing around, and just kind of realized that that was the most fun and interesting part of our practices. And we just started doing that exclusively, just, you know, getting in there and playing and just continually making stuff up as we went along. And
improvise.
Yeah.
Did this band have a name?
Yeah, although I never was a huge fan of our name. It was Elephants Gerald. I always felt that was a little dorky.
A little bit. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, September 21, 2020. Dish Wap, Peter Show, special guest Ben Banner. Hold tight for hour two. September 21, 2020. It's the second hour of the Wap from Peter Show. I'm gonna go get some more.
From the steamy swamps of Utah to the sandy deserts of Maine, the jungles of Rhode Island that I've crossed again and again, way down in Louisiana where the snow falls every day, to the shark-infested waters of the Kansas City Bay. That North Dakota Baba Ganoush I've loved since I was a lad, and the sushi of Nebraska, man's the best I've ever had. In Idaho they make that curry red hot like they should, and the monkey brains they eat in Georgia, Lord, they so good. America, America, it's such an awesome place where the light of peace and happiness shines down on every face. No one ever fires a gun, we ride on high-speed trains. Across the mountains and the plains. Now the minimum wage paid across the land, it's honest and it's fair. Every worker has a decent life with spending money to spare. No one has to worry that getting sick gonna ruin them, and the things we need to fix or do, we're fixing them and we're doing them. America, America, such an awesome place where the lights of peace and happiness shine down on every face. And no trains, our wealth redistributed across the mountains and the plains.
our show start off the second hour with Blank Bait from Ben Bennett. Hey, your pop and your ma were thinking when they named you.
Yeah. Give me a...
Also,
media-ready name or something.
Right, where you ended up, Philly, there. Benjamin Franklin, you know, he was big mason at that lot, a pretty intense lodge downtown.
Yeah.
Different rooms, you know, Egyptian, Orient, Greek, Nordic. Check it out if you can. It's by that building with Mr. Penn on the top point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The U.S. National Anthem from Sam Bennett after that. He's from Sunrise Town, Birmingham, Alabama. He's lived in Tokyo many years now. Samuel Locke Ward after that, Time's Up. Brand new from L1011. These guys just put out a triple album. Bass, drum. Well, it's kind of weird, like baritone guitar, drum, duet here. So, you know, when in these kind of times, start composing. Finally, your nose is off, Ben Bennett. Although, you like improvising.
That's pretty much the only way I know how to play.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is. It's like people saying, you gotta have some kind of order, and not realizing that randomness is a type of order, you know? So improvising is composing, right?
Yeah.
It's just not repeating yourself, maybe.
It can be, I think. Like, it's...
Not in the act of doing it, but the next time you do it doesn't mean you have to, or maybe that's bad definition I'm using.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten to the point where... I'm not sure if I can even make that much distinction between composition or improvisation or not sure if I care to that much.
Yeah.
And even when I think about the idea of repetition, I'm not really sure. 'Cause even if you, are playing compositions over and over, it's not the same experience every time you play it. You don't play it the same way every time. And there's even, when you're playing in a group, say you're playing a composition, there's improvisation involved simply in hearing the other people and responding.
Yeah,
and so
it seems like what you're talking about is like kind of an honesty, like kind of a denial people are in by using these kind of words to separate stuff in music.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I don't even equate improvisation with the idea of non-repetition. It's not like I'm playing something completely original every time I sit down. Is, you know, so much stuff that's familiar with me or part of my vocabulary or patterns that I repeat, things like that. But every moment of living is different, even if you think you're repeating something.
Which is neat coming from a drummer, man, because a lot of typical drumming situations, all kinds of repetition. Right? Probably the most repetitive cat in the band in some situations is the drummer, man, right? Because people need some kind of foundation or predictability.
Yeah.
And that becomes kind of a tourniquet, kind of a gag.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess playing with the people that I play with, and I think you've talked to Evan and you're gonna talk to Zach and Jack, I think.
Yeah, Zach Wednesday, Jack next Monday.
Yeah. It's a pretty special crew of people to me, and I feel like when we play together there's kind of trust going on where all of us just feel really, really engaged and really free. Like, there's a lot of autonomy and there's a lot of kind of creative responsibility going on at every moment of playing.
Yeah. Yeah. And by responsibility, like listening?
Just that, in every moment, it's like, it's hard to kind of like sit back and just rest in any particular idea. there's not so much a moment where you're like, okay, I got this, you know. It's like, the music keeps changing so continuously that you gotta be really present and engaged and show up.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I want to play 8 p.m. sharp.
listen too hard, I get inhibited because if I use that, if I think, you know, I need to be listening closely, it in some ways it kind of implies that there's some kind of rules about how to respond, like there, if as if there's a right and a wrong way to respond, and I got to, you know, get it right. And so
you start to self-censor yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like sometimes I kind of think of it as just being like open to hearing, like if I just hear people and I keep playing, like that's the way to go, because it's like still being. Yeah, I guess both being like connected to my like kind of internal state and how that wants to express itself, and while still being having some attunement to what's going on around what the other people are doing, but not feeling constrained to like have to respond to what they're doing in a particular way.
All right. Yeah, yeah. I think Kay, she called it blank slate. With Dose when we would try to do some jams. I should tell the people, we heard 8 p.m. sharp, and that's a duo you got called Foster yeah. Bennett Duo.
Yeah, so with the saxophonist Michael Foster, he's in Brooklyn, and we've been playing together quite a lot in the past 6 years or so.
All right. Bullets or Balloons after that with Aaron's Ass. Aloha Screwdriver there. On the show a couple episodes ago, Above Snakes, Puff Adder from Flying Vipers, their new album, Lewis Cole with Hurricane, and finally, Foster Bennett Duo again with Smoke Coming from the Bayou. Not the Bayou.
Down on the Bayou. Yeah.
That real Northwest one John Fogerty's from. El Cerrito. okay, after Elephants Gerald and then Michael Foster, in between that period, you searched out away from kind of like typical rock and roll, which is a horrible thing to say because rock and roll shouldn't be typical, but to get into this more free state?
Yeah, it was... So Elephants Gerald, that band ended when the bass player passed away, really young age. He got a brain cancer. And so that, yeah, it wasn't quite the same after that. And I was just playing by myself a lot in my basement and figuring out stuff. But also around the same time, I started playing with Jack Wright, and he was really that was really pushing me a lot to open up, because playing like that experience was kind of like being thrown constant curveballs, in that like you know, I think I might be feeling like getting the feeling of this, and then, you know, he would just change to something completely unexpected, and he was using so many different timbres. And so that kind of pushed me to try to explore more kind of timbral palette of sounds. And I kind of realized that the drum set, the trap set, as I was playing it, was not set up ideally for that. And so I kind of started reducing it, taking parts away from the kit until I got to the point where I was just playing like one drum head by itself and just trying to see how many different sounds I could get out of that with all these different techniques and whatnot. So I got down to a really reduced kind of way of playing, at least materially, like reducing my materials all the way down as far as it could go.
Yeah,
and you know, seeing what the most I could do with that was. And after that, I kind of gradually added a few more things in. So I've got like this kind of collection of a small collection of objects that where I'm like sitting on the ground and playing. So I've gotten rid of all the stands and the hardware and stuff. And that was kind of part of figuring out like how to play with Jack and these other improvisers.
I remember seeing Max Roach, and his solos were always on the hi-hat, and just the hi-hat. Uh-huh. A lot of the stand, yeah. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. September 21, 2020, Dish Wap Pedro Show. Hold on. Hour three. September 21, 2020, it's the third hour of the Wap Pedro Show.
Yeah. Thank you.
Pedro Show starts third hour with Virtual Balboa and Greg Kelly, an excerpt from Petrichor.
Yeah, I think that word, well, yeah, what that word means is the smell in the air after it rains, that kind of fresh smell that is, it's not the rain itself, but it's apparently biological compounds that get released from soil, bacteria, and fungus and such when it rains.
Okay. We had Crane after that with Jazz Opus Number 1. Bronze Age UFO from Baltimore with Boys Will Be Voids, the last part, Part D. And then Never with You Name It. So what are these combos here, Virtual Balboa and Greg Kelly and Never?
You know, we got this crew that there's Jack, right, Zach Darrow, and Evan Lipson, myself, and then, you know, some other people that come in and out of that orbit. And so it's kind of more of like this amorphous collectivity. And every, you know, when we're playing in different groupings of that, whether it's duo or trio, we come up with different band names. So Virtual Balboa is me, Zach, and Evan. Never is me, Zach, and Jack. Roughhousing is Zach, Evan, and Jack. Rest is me, Evan, and Jack. Durian Brow is me and Zach.
We're going to play some Durian Brow in the final block of music for this edition.
All right, awesome.
And these are excerpts because they're probably long pieces, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, improv, of course. When do you know when the tune's over?
When you just kind of know. Yeah,
right. I heard about, somebody was telling me, John Coltrane's that interstellar.
You know, interstellar
one his,
space?
One of his last sessions, right? He was looking at the clock, and at 5 minutes he wanted, because he knew he only had so much time, but.
Uh-huh.
A lot of life ain't that way. Yeah, I think for a few years he knew he didn't have a lot of time. His birthday's coming up Wednesday.
All right.
Yeah, 40 years. Same time on the planet as Franz Kafka.
Did not know that.
Yep, 40 years.
They've got his house kind of preserved in Philly here. There's like a plaque and there's a really gorgeous mural of Coltrane in North Philly.
Yeah, it's like it's on 33rd Street. It's the first house he bought with his GI Bill.
Yeah,
because he also got another house that he did the Love Supreme on Long Island at Dix Hills. That pad I've taken all my bands to. In fact, some working man there doing restoration. I didn't ask for this, but he just gave me a piece of the brick I keep on the dash of the boat.
Nice.
So I want to play some of this Durian Brow.
All right.
Is this like eyebrow?
We got a few different ways of thinking about that. The origin story of the band name is that Zach and I would go to these open mics in Philly and sign up and play, you know, and these are open mics that, you know, it's mostly just a bunch of singer-songwriters. And, so we wanted to sign up with a name that sounded like kind of vaguely Americana or singer-songwriter or something. And so like somehow we came up with Durian Brown, and durian being the Southeast Asian fruit. There's a presence of that in South Philly as well. And we couldn't decide between Durian Brown or Durian Bro or something like that. And when Zach was signing up, he just left off the N and it became Durian Brow. And then, subsequently, I was telling my friend about that, and my friend, Zach Rowden, he was like, Durian Brow, like the third brow, like, we're not sure if this is highbrow or lowbrow music, but it's something perpendicular maybe to highbrow and lowbrow. So it's Durian Brow. And,
it sounded kind of semiotic. Pedro's show, last music for this edition, The Third Brow. almost could be the third eye.
Yeah, when I was thinking about the third brow, I was also thinking about when you like furrow your forehead when you're confused, right, right. And that line appears on your forehead. And but then another friend was like, "Oh yeah, the third brow. Like if you have a third eye, like where's the third eyebrow?"
Right. Or if you're Hank Rollins, you only got one big ass brow.
Yeah.
Then we had Galextasy doing Never Heaven Channel. Season 2, LP 2, Part 1. These people, they're out in the desert. They've, during this Quarantino Quentin mode, 18 albums. So I don't want to hear anybody belly aching about sitting on their hands. Start to compose, people. Or improvise, like in Ben's case here. And Durian Brow with another excerpt from It Is Good. And so right now, how are you handling this? How does an improviser deal with a time for composition? A lot of recordings?
Yeah, I'm recording a good bit. I got a little studio set up in my basement here, and I still see Zach a fair amount, and we play and record. And yeah, just kind of like honing the recording and messing with the mixes and just going through like hours of material and picking out what we like and practicing a lot just by myself.
So you're saying like there's the point when you're making the music, but then after there's a big time investment after for editing, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm doing a little bit more of that. And by editing, it's mostly just kind of like selecting big chunks. Yeah.
Like Miles on the Corner, that kind of.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet, Ben?
I've got a website that is benbennett.website.
Yeah, why don't you spell that?
Okay, Ben Bennett is BenBennett.website.
WBEBSITE. The actual right. word, yeah.
Yep.
I don't want to confuse anybody. That's great. So everybody go there and see what Brother Ben's doing with the music here, and because it's, I love it. I heard all. He's also got a Bandcamp page you can probably get to from there, and lots of good records and stuff. So you're gonna be compiling this stuff and make a new record with Zach?
Yeah, that's the idea. That's that excerpt we played, the third brow. I think that's what the record's gonna be called. It's our third release as well.
And is music kind of like a place, shelter from the sitch, or is it kind of like you're the reeds blowing in the, you know, the wind blowing through the reeds and you're resonating with the sitch?
Little from column A, little from column B.
Okay.
yeah, some alternate space where the sitch kind of opens up and you feel a little bit more alive to change and the changing nature of reality, and in a way that you can exalt in it.
That's beautiful. I love what you're doing. Please keep on keeping on.
Hey, likewise.
Okay, people, it's been September 21, 2020 edition of Alfred Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.